Today I'm interviewing Buzz Fulton. Could you state your full name?
No one knows me by that. Walter.
Walter.
Walter Eugene.
Fulton. All right. And when were you born?
January 17th, 1921.
All right. And today is July 21st, 2004. And it's about 10:20, and we're in his home at 2108 Second Street. What I would like to start out with is talk about your early life in Le Grand. And so you were born in Le Grand.
Right.
And then how long did you stay in Le Grand?
Well, don't remember when we went to the Dalles. My dad worked for the railroad. And I was probably about 3 or 4, maybe. Somewhere along in there. And well, I know I ran away from home and my grandmother caught me at the railroad tracks, and I don't remember that. We lived down on Jackson in Le Grand that time, and then we moved to the Dalles. And
do you remember anything about the railroads at that young age? Are there any memories about?
Not really here, but my memory starts of living in the Dalles. And mostly we lived on Jackson Street in the Dalles also. We lived on Jackson here. And then I went through up to the 7th grade in the Dalles. And then we moved back to Le Grand, and I started the 8th grade here.
So what did your father do for the railroad?
He was a conductor, and he ended up with just an 8th grade education, but he was always very interested in education, and I can always remember him threatening to punch my lights out if I went railroading. So I didn't, but all my contemporaries that did go railroading from Le Grand High School ended up retiring, and they worked pretty much through World War II and were never laid off like my dad was. He went through the Depression of the railroad. That was his bias on wanting everyone to have an education. Was he didn't have one and insisted on everyone else having one.
So what year was it that you came back to Le Grand?
It's it being 1930. I graduated from high school in 39. I started 8th grade, so 34. About 1934.
Mm-hmm. What was Le Grand like in 1934 when you came back?
Well, it really probably had a bigger business section downtown, more stores than it does now. Because, you know, there was everything, clothing stores, men's clothing store, two of those. The population, as I recall, then was around 9,000. Now it's, what, 12, something roughly like that. So the growth has been rather slow. It's kind of interesting on them arguing over future growth now. Had the big hassle over that. And it really, if you look at history, it hasn't grown that much. But at that time, the railroad was the major employer, because there was probably 200 or 300 employees in the back shops that repaired engines and repaired railroad cars and all the things that kept trains going. And then there was train crews, was engineer, fireman, 3 brakemen, and a conductor. And now they're running with an engineer and conductor, and that's it. But
so was your father a conductor when you moved back as well?
His background, he started out when he was about, I think he lied about his age and started working at about 17 on the railroad in Montana as a fireman, and he had to shovel coal. And he told about going to work in the wintertime and stripping down to just no shirt, shovel coal, be below zero. And he didn't like that, so that's how he came to Oregon, and he hired out as a brakeman.
Now, to LeGrand, or?
To LeGrand.
And, so how old was he when he came to LeGrand?
Oh, he was probably in his 20s, somewhere along
there. What was his name?
Harry Fulton. Mm-hmm. And then a brakeman in those days had to ride the top of the train, set up brakes and by hand. And then he couldn't get enough clothes on in the wintertime to keep warm. But anyway, he stuck with the railroading. I think he worked for 42 years for the railroad.
What made him decide to go to the Dalles?
Well, just to hold a job. Depression came along, and they had different areas of seniority on the railroad at that time, and he didn't have enough seniority in LeGrand to hold a steady job, but he could bump on, they called, and hold a job in the Dalles. So he went down there, and then it kind of reversed. I think maybe he might have gone down there because of the weather. It was a little warmer in the Dalles. And then at the height of the Depression in the mid-30s there, early 30s, they got laid off in the Dalles too. But he could work as a brakeman in LeGrand, so that's why we moved back.
So he went from being a conductor to a brakeman?
Had to go back to a brakeman to hold a
job. So was that quite a lesser
job? Yeah. And I remember as a kid in the Dalles neighborhood, we had a gang of kids, and gang connotated a different thing than it does now. It was 9 kids that our dads were all having a hard time making a living, my dad was the only one out of the whole 9 of the kids there in the Dalles that had a steady job, and I think he made $75 a half month, so $150 a month, and that was one of those families of the 9 kids, was one of the higher incomes of all. And then he lost the job there and had to come back to LeGrand. And he came back, and we stayed in the Dalles till I finished the 7th grade. And he kind of commuted, bought an old car, came back to the Dalles on weekends. And sometimes he'd lay off for a week and come home. And I think that went on for maybe a year or so. And then we came back to LeGrand.
So, being a brakeman on a railroad, was that a dangerous job, or was it a...
Yes, it was, especially over the mountain between LeGrand and Reith was the division point then. And they had to ride the top of the trains up the hill to take the brakes off, ride the train down the hill setting the brakes up, because they didn't have the mechanical technology that they have now on the trains. So, yeah, it was a fairly dangerous job.
Mm-hmm. So when did he become conductor again?
Well, let's see. Probably about the time, a year or so after we came back to LeGrand, I think he then became a conductor. And, yeah, because I remember probably in the 8th grade, I can talk about it now because he'd have gotten fired then. they had work trains that went to Joseph and worked on the railroad. And I rode up there with him several times. He'd take me because it was kind of off the main line. And they'd go up, stay all night, and then come back, sleep on the caboose, and I'd ridden up there, and then we'd stop somewhere where the train now that they're running out of Joseph and Enterprise on the scenic walking there in the Grand Ronde River where there's no railroad, no roads. Go up there and fish, and he'd run the work train, and then I'd come back with him. That was a great experience in the summertime. In fact, that kind of got me interested in wanting to go railroading, but he insisted that I not.
So describe railroading. Describe how they got. Was it riding under the train, or how did railroading work?
Well, you mean as far as his job and
no,
or what?
Like you said, some of your friends went railroading. How did they do that?
Mike, the guys that were in my class in high school, several of them, their parents worked for the railroad too. And so they hired out as a brakeman or as a fireman and did their student trips.
I'm interested in riding the rails. Did any of the students ride the rails?
Oh,
or
no.
Climb
in the Depression, that was the hobos that did that. The guys that didn't have jobs at all and were going around the country looking for work.
So did they climb under the train to do that?
Well,
or they
climb in an empty box car or just get on a car anywhere. And I don't know, I guess some of them, I remember my dad talking about wood, yet there were some, the framework underneath a rail car, and they would get in under there and ride. Mm. But that was kind of dangerous. And I remember those during the Depression that some of the hobos that rode the rails would come around and beg for food. I remember them coming to the Dalles, and the word was that they'd mark the sidewalk where they could get a handout, somebody that was good-hearted, and put a mark, and then the next bum would know which houses to go to.
Do you remember them coming to the house when you were a kid?
I remember some in the Dalles that would come, and we lived quite a ways from the railroad. It'd be quite a hike up there. Hmm. And they'd come around and ask for food or want to do some kind of work around the house. Hmm. I remember my dad always said, well, don't give anything out, but he, and the rail crews, I think they tolerated some of them. A lot of them kicked them off the train, but some of them, if they had an empty box car, they let them ride.
So when your father said he didn't want you railroading, he meant he didn't want you working for the railroad?
Yeah, he didn't want me working for the railroad.
Why?
Because, he went through the Depression and didn't have a job. And then if any kind of an accident happened, they usually fired the whole crew. And he got fired a time or two for a... They had a derailment or a wreck, and they fired the engineer, fireman, brakeman, and conductor, and the whole group. Hmm. And I remember, and I think I have some pictures that before he and my mother were married, he got fired on a railroad here out of La Grande. And
what year would that be?
Well, that had probably been in 16 to 17, somewhere around there. And he went to San Diego for work and didn't find anything and came back. And, I remember he had some pictures that he took when he was down in San Diego and went to the San Diego Zoo, and he took a picture of a beat-up looking old buffalo. I remember that picture. And then quite a few years, in the 40s when I was in the Navy, I went to San Diego Zoo and saw a buffalo there, and I took a picture and sent it to him.
Told him
it was the same old buffalo that was there when he was there. Yeah.
So what was going to school like in La Grande? in the 30s?
Well, when I started in the 8th grade...
And that, you said that was 1934?
Yeah, let's see, 34... Yeah, that would have been because I graduated in 39. And high school was four-year high school, like they are now. So education kind of goes in a circle anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All the grade schools had 8 grades. Riverview was 1 through 8. All the grade schools had an 8th grade football team and basketball teams, and they played each other.
Mm.
In the city league, I guess it would be.
Was the high school located where it is now?
No, it was on the corner of 4th and M. The old high school. It used to be the junior high that they tore that building down when they built the middle school in, what, 73, I guess. Yeah, it was...
What did it look like, the high school?
Well, it was originally a three-story building. I guess there was a fire in the early 30s before we came back to LeGrand and burnt off the top floor, or they didn't build it back. They just built it back to the two stories. And in fact, it was set by a volunteer fireman, and he'd set several fires around town.
Who was that?
I don't remember his name. He was still around here when I came back and was
going to school. So they didn't take him to jail or anything?
No, I don't think he ever spent any time in jail. But, I think in that previous to when we started, we were talking about Lee Johnson writing a history.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that might be in the book that he wrote about the guy that set the fire.
Hmm.
But anyway, it was well known, and it was on the corner there. And then there was another old Central School. Central Elementary was where the middle school is now. And then when they built the new high school, that was in the 50s. 52, 53, something like that, where it is now on the corner, 2nd and K. They turned the old high school into the junior high, and they made a three-year high school. And the junior high was 9, 7, 8, 9 grades.
But and when you went to high school, it was 4 years.
Yeah, when I went, and Central was just Central where I started in the 8th grade was the old building on the corner of, where the middle school is now. That's
so when you
K.
came back, you actually went to elementary school?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
For 8th grade.
What was that like?
There was 2 homeroom classes of 8th grade. And then we, it seems like we stayed part of the time in the homeroom and probably had English and something else in there. And then we moved to another classroom for math, and there was a shop class and home ec for the gals.
Do you remember any of your teachers?
In junior high, yeah. Effie Snyder was my homeroom teacher.
Effie Snyder?
Mm-hmm. She's a nice lady. And I believe she taught English. And then I don't remember some of the others. Yeah, Clive Moore was a PE teacher, and he coached basketball.
Clive Moore. What was he like?
He seemed tall to me at that time, but I'm not sure how tall he was. Slim guy. Nice fellow. And I had him for a study hall teacher. And, oh man, let's see, there's a math teacher. That was high school, King. But,
What kinds of activities were you involved with in your elementary, junior high years?
Well, when we moved from the Dells, there wasn't any scouting program that I recall there. You know, there probably was, maybe in the upper grades, but I just went to an elementary school and then 1 year, 7th grade, junior high. When I came here, I think probably the biggest influence in my life probably came from the scouting program. And the guy that ran that was Harvey Carter, who was a teacher in the junior high school. I didn't ever have him as a teacher, but I joined his scout troop. And
when you were in 8th grade?
Yeah, when mm-hmm. I was in 8th grade. And I don't know, we lived right on the Columbia River in the Dalles, but I didn't learn to swim until I came to La Grande. And so Harvey Carter was quite a swimming teacher, taught his lessons. Well, he taught some up at Pinecone. There was a swimming pool up on the river, right about where Hilgard is.
They called it Pinecone?
Pinecone. It was that picture in the book you were showing me of Jack Evans. There was a swimming pool there and an auto court. And he taught some swimming up there, but most of his classes were taught over at Cove, in the Cove swimming pool. Learned to swim in his scout troop, and then this picture that I showed you is his scout troop. And
they're doing a production of
Tom Sawyer.
So do they do a play every year?
I don't know. I think that was kind of a one-time thing. It was a money raiser or something mm-hmm. and for scouting. I don't know why I wasn't in it. I wasn't a thespian, I guess. But I think I had just probably gotten started in the scout troop when they put this together. So,
what other kinds of things did you do in the scout troop?
So well, he ran a summer scouting program at Willow Lake, over on the west side of the lake, where I think they're all houses now, but he and another fellow had the scout camp. And then on his scouting program, it was in conjunction with the Episcopal Church, and we met, and it was called Honan Hall. It was there where...
Honan Hall?
Honan Hall.
How do you spell that?
I think it was just H-O-N-A-N. Uh-huh. It was right where Craig's Cleaners is now, right in there. And that's where the scout troop met. And
what was Honan Hall? Was it at?
I don't know. It was something that I think the Episcopal Church might have owned. I'm not sure on that. It was just a kind of a recreation hall. Mm-hmm. All I remember is the scouting program was there. Anyway, and then I think the Knights of St. John or something, that was a youth group of the Episcopal Church, they met there too. Anyway, in the wintertime, and that's another thing that was, Carter was a big influence in my life and got me interested in skiing and made a lifelong thing out of that.
So the Boy Scouts went skiing?
Yeah, nobody knew anything about skiing.
So where did you go skiing?
Well, we, in the wintertime, I was going to get that story. That's a long one, too. We would take off Friday night after school, during school year in the winter, and this Harvey Carter had access to it's called Blumenstein's Cabin on the top of Mount Emily, up there by where the tower is now. We'd take off Friday night after school, pack all our junk, no sleeping bags then, just a blanket or two, and hike to the top of Mount Emily. And we get up there, well, probably 11 or 12 o'clock
so
at night.
So hike from down in the valley all the way to the top?
Yeah.
Wow.
Go up Fox Hill. It was a long hike. And go up there, and the cabin, as I recall, was always the supply of wood in there, and somebody always had to sleep on the wood pile. And no, I think there was only one or two bunks, and we usually drew cards for see who got the bunk. And then we'd stay all night and ski around there the next day.
So what do you use for skis?
Well, some of them had their own that they made, you know, just steamed a piece of wood and bent them. And I think I had a pair that bought at Ward's, cheap, just a toe piece on, no bindings or anything.
How'd you keep them on?
Oh, you put your foot in, well, just a loop over the toe, as long as you kept shuffling ahead, foot would stay in. I remember the shoe shop in town, he started making some leather straps that went around the heel for you.
Who was that in the shoe shop? Do you remember the name of it?
No, not right offhand. Can't think of it.
That's okay.
I can see the guy, but I can't think of his name. Anyway, various things, and then if you were really rich and could buy them, you could buy a leather strap that went around the heel, and you cut a groove in the heel of your boot, you know, and use big old bamboo basket ski poles and hike up there. And Harvey Carter, he always had you kind of pair up with somebody to take your meals, and this one guy in the picture here, that Shelton, he decided that the way to take a meal would be to take a can of food for each meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And he only did that once, because first off, all the food was heavy, you know, canned food's heavy. And we'd usually have a meal, what, three meals on Saturday and maybe two on Sunday.
What'd you eat?
Well, to go on with the story, this Don Shelton, he took these cans, and so he gets up there, and so for breakfast he'd have a can of corn, and for lunch maybe a can of beans, and for dinner, well, he'd have another can of beans, or else a can of something else. And so everybody else, you know, maybe we'd take some bread and hot dogs. And the guy that I buddied with, we took bread and hot dogs, and then we thought, well, we needed, none of us liked coffee, and we didn't want to pack milk, so we took tea bags, or tea. I'm not sure that they were in bags then. I think it was just loose tea. Well, anyway, for supper, and I'll never forget that, we had these weenies, and of course there wasn't any water in the cabin. We had to melt snow, pretty dry snow, you know, it'd take a wheelbarrow full of snow to get a quart of water. Anyway, we melted the water and cooked the weenies, and then we didn't want to wait, melt more water for the tea, so we put the tea in the weenie water and had weenie water tea. Pretty bad. Pretty bad. And so we changed our things the next year on what we took, and tried to take food that, you know, you could cook. And we had a lot of laughs over Shelton and his can, one can per meal. And then the other kid, Claude Baker, and I that drank weenie water tea. Yeah, anyway, coming back down, no one really knew how to ski. I think finally some of us went to the library and we found a book that Otto Lang wrote on how to ski. And we,
Lang, L-A-N-G.
Otto Lang, yeah.
Uh-huh.
He became a something in the movies later on, movie director. Anyway, we read that book and then it tried to decide how to do it from the book. And
so you, would you ski all the way down?
Yeah, and of course we couldn't turn and you'd go until you got scared going too fast and then you'd fall down to stop. But anyway, and then we got the idea to cut a tree and then you could straddle the tree because you break your ski poles if you straddled it and set on, you know. You could cut a thin tree and take all the limbs off and then put it between your legs and set on it and drag so you didn't go too fast. Well, that was kind of my introduction to original skiing. And then later on, we went up a place called the Stump Patch on the highway towards Pendleton. It's where the freeway divides now. One's up high and one's down low, just past the Stargate turnoff. And just walk up and
Stump
down the
pass.
Yeah, it was a place that had been logged off and kind of went down a gully and off the highway. And then several people started putting in.
Barry Bigner?
Yeah, his folks had a grocery store here in La Grande, Joel's Grocery. And
where was that located?
Oh, on Cedar Street, about, what is it, Maine? Cedar, Maine. Anyway, they put in a little rope tow up there. People skied there, and then McFarland's put in a rope tow and along there by Camille on the old highway.
McFarland's, who would that be then?
Oh, Ray McFarland was his folks. I think he was a railroader too. Anyway, just a little short rope tow made out of an old car chassis. And we go up there, and that's really where I kind of started learning to ski. And then when I was in high school, there was our senior social problems teacher was, at that time, everybody thought was a real good skier. And he started taking us to Anthony Lakes.
Now, when did Anthony Lakes open?
Oh, they were going. Harold Lee had Anthony Lakes. There was just a rope tow there.
Was he from the Grand or from?
No, he. I don't know where he came from. He lived at the foot of the hill there.
Did he buy Anthony Lakes or the land?
Well, it was Forest Service then too, but he had, I think he had a fishing concession or something at the lake, and he put in a rope tow, and that would have been in about 1937.
So was it the same kind of thing, a car chassis with ropes?
His car chassis and metal car wheels on a post that the rope went over and you hung on. Then you either ran your fingers through the rope or it went over the wheel and it hurt, or you had a rope hook that hooked on and then you had a belt pulled you up.
Just to digress for just a second before we get into talking about Anthony Lakes, what did you wear when you went skiing?
Oh, just whatever you could scrape up, you know. Before, in the 30s, if you had some wool pants or something, then just a lot of, like a logger boot. And then at that time, the bindings started coming in, and things were a little better than when we hiked to the top of Mount Emily. But anyway, Harold Lee had that, and then that's when, there's another book on Tales of Two Skis or something that's written on Anthony Lakes that an attorney in Baker wrote. And anyway, they built WPA projects and PWA and built Timberline Lodge at Mount Hood during the Depression for all those artisans that needed a job. And anyway, they built that. Well, they had, when Harold Lee had Anthony Lakes, they were going to build one similar to that at Anthony Lakes. And there's a picture of that somewhere, of the design of it, that it would be smaller but similar to Timberline. Well, then Hitler marches into Poland and World War II kind of was hanging on the horizon, and the federal funding got canceled. And there was an organization in Baker and LeGrand that they had to raise some money, matching funds, to build that lodge. Well, they'd raised part of the money.
What was that organization? What was the name of that organization that raised money raisers?
It was the start of the ski club out of Baker. I don't know. It started in Baker, and then there were some of the people. Well, I think Bingner, maybe some from LeGrand, one of the Bonenkamps, Lynn Bonenkamp. Some of those were on that committee that was raising the money. Then the war came along, funding got canceled, and all went down the tube, and Harold Lee closed up Anthony Lake sometime. Well, I don't know. Must have been in the early 40s.
So when you were in high school, how often did you go up to Anthony Lakes?
Oh, we probably tried to go every week if we could bum a ride. No one had a car, you know, that'd go. And some of the local older people that was skiing and interested, would, you could bum a ride with them. They'd haul you up there. And then this Rollo Gould, that was the teacher, he kind of rustled some rides for us, and he'd take a group, and we had a ski club in the high school.
Who would you go skiing with in those days in high school?
Oh, well, there's John Comp, was a doctor in Vail, and Bill Fries, local guy, and Don Shelton, myself, Bob Fowles, a couple of other people, I can't remember their names right offhand, that kind of drifted away or left during World War II and didn't ever come back to LeGrand. Mm-hmm. But, and the ski club, I'd have to dig out a yearbook and look at the picture, but we had a picture in the yearbook of the ski club, and there were some girls in there too. And
so when you went up to Anthony Lakes, was there just that one rope tow, or did you hike up other places?
Well, you could hike up past the rope tow. Well, yeah, you're familiar with Anthony Lakes. The rope tow went at the top of, the top of Lower College. There's a big hump there, mm-hmm. where it's kind of steep.
Yeah.
The rope tow ended right on that hump, and then it went down to the road, where Road Run is. Mm. And it really went up about where Lower College Run is. And then later on, when Anthony started again after World War II, they used the CCC camp for warming hut, and there was overnight facility, and that kind of stuff, and a cook shack, and shower room, and restrooms.
But at that time, there wasn't anything when you first started going up there.
But when Harold Lee ran it, it was just I don't even remember warming hut was at that time, because you hiked up Road Run there to get to the bottom of the rope top. But anyway, we had a pretty active ski club in the high school,
what were your interests when you were in high school?
Well, I was pretty thin and not very big, and I made the football team when I was a senior, but I tried out earlier than that, didn't make it, and played a little basketball, and then skiing was probably the main thing, and then I was still active in the Scouts till, probably most of us drifted away about the time we were juniors in high school.
Mm-hmm. Did the same person have the Scouts that whole time?
Right.
Yeah. And did you continue to go up to Mount Emily?
Well, we kind of gave up on the hiking up there after we started going to Anthony. Mm-hmm. And then when we were, some of these people in that picture that when we were older, juniors, seniors, we were the big guys and kind of helped at the Scout camp. And some of the younger ones were the coming up to Scout camp. That was at Wallowa Lake. Worked with Harvey Carter and kind of went up early and set up the camp. They had board floors and tents on the floors, and a couple of canoes, and don't think there was much of a boat dock there. It was just kind of a bank down to the lake, and we kind of helped set up some of the stuff, and then would stay.
What kind of activities were at the camp?
Oh, they had leather crafts, craft work, and then usually there was a lot of hikes out of the camp, like to Aneroid Lake or Ice Lake. And,
was that when Wallowa County was in Union County? Were they all the same at that point, that time?
No, it was separate counties, mm-hmm. Wallowa County, Union. The thing I remember, one year after we worked up there at the Scout camp, ones that wanted to, we hiked back from Wallowa Lake to Cove and packed everything. It took us, 2-3 days and went up through the lake basin. That would have been 30, that was probably 37 or 38. Anyway, I'd forgot about it. I carved my name on a tree way back in North Mile Meadows there along the trail. And the date. And then this guy, John Kopp, that's a retired doctor over in Vail, he and his son Jim, they were real active with horses and backpacked in there, and he told me it was sometime, it must have been in the 70s, they were back there on a horse packing trip, happened to go by there and saw my name on the tree carved in 1937 or 8 or something, and he reminded me of it. So, those were some good times.
Mm-hmm. So, you graduated from high school in, what year?
1939.
Then what did you do?
Well, everybody kind of drifted to Eastern Oregon to start school over there. And, of course, it was pretty small.
What was it called at that time?
Let's see. Changed. It was started out as Eastern Oregon Normal School, and then I think when we started, it was changed to Eastern Oregon College. Then it was Eastern Oregon College of Education. So it's had several names. Anyway, most of us started there, and then...
What did you major in?
Well, I just... lower division. I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't think I did. And, in fact, I got to give skiing credit for getting me into education, because it finally dawned on me that there might have been a correlation between teaching skiing and teaching school. And, but anyway, I started there, and then I go 2 years, and then I went to Oregon State.
Can I back up for just a second? What is it about skiing that that made you just fall in love with it when you were in junior high? What is it about the art of skiing that you enjoy so much?
I guess part is the challenge of trying to do it better. Try to do it without falling down. The beauty of the winters, I guess. I never thought much about how miserable it could be, you know. Cold, if you didn't like cold. And then just the challenge and being out. And it used to be not the commercialized thing it is now, you know, with big resorts. You're kind of like you're out in the wilderness. And I guess that, and then it was something that you didn't have to do in an organized team fashion. You know, it, I guess that's kind of the goofy thing about sports is most people, by the time they get through high school, and then very few are successful in college, in basketball, football, or track. And you got to have a facility. Skiing you could do on your own. And then, you know, like the Mount Emily trips, you were breaking trail and, you know, out in the wilderness, kind of on your own. And I guess that was probably what I got interested in. And then later on teaching other people to ski was enjoyable. Some of that's pretty challenging. But, I don't know. But then, and it's something you can do all your life. You know. I'm still doing it.
So. That's great. Okay, we'll get back to, so you were at Eastern Oregon.
Yeah, and then I went to Oregon State.
What year was that you went to Oregon State?
I was down there when they had the transplanted Rose Bowl at Durham, North Carolina. Oregon State went to the Rose Bowl, and they didn't want to have it in Pasadena because the war had just started. They were afraid Japanese were going to disrupt the Rose Bowl, so they played back there. Anyway, and then I went to the Navy. I enlisted in the Navy. I finished that second year at Oregon State, and then I went in the Navy.
Do you know what year that was that you went in the Navy?
I enlisted in 42, in the fall of 42. And I finished the school year in 43. I should have graduated in 43. That was 4 years after high school, but I changed majors a couple of times.
What was it like being up at the college in those years? What was the college like?
Well, it was really uncertain, I guess, is the least you could say, because you didn't know how much longer you were going to be there, because the draft was in effect. That's why I enlisted in the Navy, was to, I didn't want to be a foot soldier, I guess. And, and I was in a fraternity house. And
which fraternity?
Sigma Nu. And,
how many fraternities were on campus?
Oh, man, fraternity was a big thing. Then a guy from Union and the Grand got me to go to the house, David Baum. Anyway,
so David Baum was going to school at that time?
He was at Oregon State. He graduated from Union High School, and mm-hmm. he went right to Oregon State when he was
Were there fraternities at Eastern as well?
No.
No.
Hmm. No, and so, anyway, you had to make your grades to be initiated. I think I made a 3.5 for that term and got initiated, and then after that, and the war was looming large, and I didn't do very well in school. I too much social life, I guess. Anyway, and then I thought, well, I'm not going to be here anyway. And so I finished that year in 43, and then I went to the Navy, San Diego. And was in until 46, got out late 46, and ended up mostly in schools and training. To a PBM school, flying boat school, and radar was coming in. It was radar technician. And then I didn't really care for the Navy, and all I wanted was out, which was kind of dumb because I didn't really have anything in mind to do when I got out. So then I ended up going back in the National Guard as soon as they reactivated it and stayed for 25 years.
So did you move back to LeGrand after you got out of the Navy?
Came back to LeGrand, thought about going back to school.
What year was that when you came back to LeGrand?
Oh, it was 1946.
Were a lot of people coming back from military service?
Few, yeah. And some going back to school. Anyway, I went back on the GI Bill.
Back to Eastern?
I went back to Oregon State when I got back home. Mm-hmm. 1 year, and then decided I had a whole bunch of hours, and it was in education, and I didn't want to teach, and so I quit, came back to LeGrand. And then I went through kind of the experience of finding everything I didn't want to do.
Such as?
Oh, working in the sawmill, and I surveyed for Union County, and I carried mail. And
which sawmill was that?
Yeah, it was Stang's then, and then it was what they go to. Eventually, Boise Cascade. I worked there when it was a furniture factory.
Uh-huh. So it was a Stang sawmill. What was your job at the sawmill?
Oh, I was, I fed a planer, rough lumber planer. And then, what did I do? Oh, I drove truck for a wholesale grocery outfit and had the Baker Nehigh bottling agency here in LeGrand. It was out of Baker, but I had a warehouse here. Truck for them.
Were jobs at that time fairly easily to easy to obtain?
There was a lot of well, I suppose there was, yeah, and school teaching was starting to catch on, you know, I mean, expanding educational system. Anyway, you could find all kinds of service jobs, that sort of thing, I think, and And then...
Was that because there were a lot of people away at the war, or...?
Well, they were all coming back, and pretty... I think everybody was kind of just wanted out, except there were a few that stayed, and, like my good friend Bill Freeze, he stayed as a pilot, and... But most of them got out and came back. And
did most of the guys that you went in with, that you had gone to high school with, did they come back to La Grande?
Well, out of the group that left La Grande, there was several in my class in high school that went railroading and didn't go in the service. And then there were several of us that came back, and one of my good friends, he came back, and then he went back to school down the valley, then came back as an attorney to La Grande.
Who is that?
Ross Herring. And, yeah, there were quite a few came back, but then I got married.
Was this someone you had known before?
No, Well, Belva, she went to high school here in La Grande, but I didn't know her in high school. She was 4 years behind me, and I met her after I came back from the Navy. And
Belva is B-E-L-M-A?
B-E-L-V-A.
Belva. Belva, okay.
Yeah. And we got married, and...
What year was that you got married? Uh-oh.
1947, 8. Well,
somewhere.
That's another story that I've been in trouble on all my life.
Oh, tell it.
Well, on our, it was somewhere close to 25 years. We got married. In March. Her birthday is March the 5th. We got married March 7th. And for some reason, one year I thought something was March the 10th, and I missed both of them. Both her birthday and wedding. And so for our 25th, our kids bought me a money clip engraved with 25th anniversary, and then on the back was engraved on when we got married. Well, the guy that engraved it made a mistake to engrave it wrong. So it was still off. But anyway, I finally redeemed myself.
Where did you get married?
Here in La Grande.
Where?
And at the Episcopal Church. The, as John Kopp, his dad was the minister of the Jim Cobb's granddad, father, minister of the Episcopal Church.
Is that where it is now? Was it the school church where it is now?
Yeah, yeah. And and at that time, I was working as parts man at Caterpillar Tractor. And then we got involved in the Elks Club, and I started through the chairs. Got involved in that, and involved in the American Legion and everything, and was at the Elks Club one night having a beer with a registrar from Eastern Oregon College. Oh, and in the meantime, after that, another guy and I bought a service station. I had it for 8 years, but while I was doing the service station thing, like having a beer with a registrar at the college, and he knew I'd gone to Eastern, and anyone know what I was doing and everything. And so he says, why don't you come up and let's go through your transcripts, see how much it takes to graduate, because I didn't have a degree yet.
Where was your service station, by the way?
Up here on 2nd and Adams. And Texaco Station, and so I went up and he said, well, if you come back, I think we can get you graduated if you'll go one term and a summer session. So I thought, well, not too bad. So I sold the service station, had three kids, still had the state GI Bill, which wasn't much, went back to school.
So you had three children between the time, during the time you had the service station?
Right. Uh-huh. And so I ended up, God, I had about three jobs, keeping books out of Pioneer Flour Mill, and worked for a competitor service station guy, George Callback.
Where was the Pioneer Flour Mill?
Out at Island City. They just tore it all down, you know, not too long ago. Anyway, got that done, and then in the meantime, I was teaching skiing at Spout Springs all the time, too, and in the wintertime. So I finished, I got my degree, and we were going to leave town and find a job somewhere. And they fired the football coach at the high school here, and he ran the ski program, too. So the guy that was principal at the high school, Ron Walk, he got a hold of me and wanted to know what I was going to do. He says, well, can't get you a job, but if you'll take the ski program, if you'll go to a post-summer session at Portland State, get your credit for driver ed, I can have you teach driver ed, give me a half-time job if you'll handle a ski program. So I did that and spent 25 years at the high school.
So did you also do the football as well?
No, I didn't do football. They hired another football coach.
Mm-hmm. And, so what year was this that you started teaching at the high school?
Fall of 58.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I drove bus at the high school because I was on a half-time contract. So. I don't know. I must not have done anything really well because I was doing too many things to do it. I don't know how.
Now, the service station that you owned for that 7 years, was it one of those full-service service stations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what kinds of things did you do for people?
Well, I had front end alignment, and lube oil change, tires, sold tires, pump gas, full service, everything. I had it 8 years.
Was the name, did it have a name, the Texaco?
Yeah, just Fulton's Texaco.
Fulton's Texaco.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, well, in Velda's